It comes. Daniel backed away from the cliff edge. Lucy's heart pounded for fear of what he was about to do. He certainly wasn't going to sleep. He got a running start, picking up inhuman speed by the time he reached the cliff's edge and then launched himself into the air. Luce waited for his wings to unfurl. She waited for the soft thunder of their grand unfolding, opening wide and catching the air in awesome glory. She'd seen him take flight like this in the past, and every time it struck her to her core how desperately she loved him. But Daniel's wings never shot out from his back. When he reached the edge of the cliff, he went over like any other boy. And he fell like any other boy, too. Luce screamed, a loud and long and terrified cry, until Bill clapped his dirty stone hand over her mouth. She threw him off, ran to the edge of the cliff, and crawled forward. Daniel was still falling. It was a long way down. She watched his body grow smaller and smaller. "He'll extend his wings, won't he?" she gasped. "He'll realize that he's going to fall and fall until..." She couldn't even say it.
"No," Bill said.
"But..."
"He'll slam right into that ground a couple of thousand feet down, yes," Bill said. "He'll break every bone in his body. But don't worry, he can't kill himself. He only wishes he could."
He turned to her and sighed.
"Now do you believe his love?"
"Yes," Luce whispered, because all she wanted to do at that moment was plunge off the cliff after him. That was how much she loved him back. But it wouldn't do any good.
"They were being so careful." Her voice was strained. "We both saw what happened, Bill. Nothing. She was so innocent. So how could she have died?"
Bill sputtered a laugh.
"You think you know everything about her, just because you saw the last 3 minutes of her life from across a mountaintop?"
"You're the one who made me use binoculars."
"Oh," she froze. "Wait a minute." Something haunted her about the way her past self's eyes had seemed to change, just for a moment, right at the end. And suddenly, Luce knew.
"What killed her this time wasn't something I could have witnessed, anyway."
Bill rolled his claws, waiting for her to finish the thought.
"It was happening inside her."
He applauded slowly.
"I think you might be ready now."
"Ready for what?"
"Remember what I mentioned to you in Helston, after you talked to Roland?"
"You disagreed with him about me getting close to my past selves?"
"You still can't rewrite the story, Luce. You can't change the narratives. If you try to..."
"I know it distorts the future. I don't want to change the past. I just need to know what happens, why I keep dying. I thought it was a kiss or a touch or something physical, but it seems more complicated than that."
Bill yanked the shadow out from behind Luce's feet like a bullfighter wielding a red cape. Its edges flickered with silver.
"Are you ready to put your soul where your mouth is?" he asked. "Are you ready to go 3D?
"I'm ready."
Luce punched open the announcer and braced herself against the briny wind inside.
"Wait,"
she said, looking at Bill hovering at her side.
"What's 3D?
"Wave of the future, kid," he said.
Luce gave him a hard stare.
"Okay, there's an unsonorous technical term for it, cleaving. But to me, 3D sounds much more fun."
Bill dove inside the dark tunnel and beckoned her with a crooked finger.
"Trust me, you'll love it."
10. The Depths. Lhasa, Tibet, April 30, 1740. Daniel hit the ground running. Wind ripped across his body. The sun felt close against his skin. He was running and running, and had no idea where he was. He'd burst from the announcer without knowing, and though it felt right in almost every way, something nagged at his memory. Something was wrong. His wings. They were absent. No, they were still there, of course, but he felt no urge to let them out, no burning itch for flight. Instead of the familiar yearning to soar into the sky, the pull he felt was down. A memory was rising to the surface of his mind. He was nearing something painful, the edge of something dangerous. His eyes focused on the space in front of him, and saw nothing but thin air.
He threw himself backward, arms flailing as his feet skidded along the rock. He hit the ground on his backside and came to a stop just before he plunged off an unfathomable cliff. He caught his breath, then rolled his body carefully around so he could peer over the edge. Below him, an abyss so eerily familiar. He got to his hands and knees and studied the vast darkness below. Was he down there still? Had the announcer ejected him here before or after it had happened? That was why his wings hadn't burst forth. They'd remembered this life's agony and stayed put. Tibet, where just his words had killed her. That life's Lucinda had been raised to be so chaste she wouldn't even touch him. Though he'd ached for the feel of her skin on his, Daniel had respected her wishes. Secretly, he'd hoped that her refusal might be a way to outsmart their curse at last. But he'd been a fool again. Of course touch wasn't the trigger. The punishment ran far deeper than that. And now he was back here, in the place where her death had driven him into a despair so overwhelming that he tried to put an end to his pain. As if that were possible. The whole way down, he'd known he would fail. Suicide was a mortal luxury, not afforded to angels. His body trembled at the memory. It wasn't just the agony of all his shattered bones, or the way the fall had left his body black and blue. No, it was what came afterward. He'd lain there for weeks, his body wedged in the dark emptiness between two vast boulders. Occasionally, he'd come to, but his mind was so awash in misery that he wasn't able to think about Lucinda. He wasn't able to think about anything at all, which had been the point. But as was the way of angels, his body healed itself faster and more completely than his soul ever could. His bones knit back together, his wounds sealed in neat scars, and, over time, disappeared completely. His pulverized organs grew healthy. All too soon, his heart was full again and strong and beating. It was Gabby who'd found him after more than a month, who'd helped him crawl out from the crevasse, who'd put splints on his wings and carried him away from this place. She'd made him vow to never do it again. She'd made him vow to always maintain hope. And now here he was again. He got to his feet and once more teetered at the edge.
No, please. Oh, God, don't. I just couldn't bear it if you jumped.
It wasn't Gabby speaking to him now in the mountain. This voice dripped with sarcasm. Daniel knew who it belonged to before he even spun around. Cam lounged against a wall of tall black boulders. Over the colorless earth, he'd spread out an enormous prayer tapestry, woven with rich strands of burgundy and ochre thread. He dangled a charred yak's leg in his hand and bit off a huge hunk of stringy meat.
Oh, what the hell? Cam shrugged, chewing. Go ahead and jump. Any last words you want me to pass along to Luce? Where is she?
Daniel started toward him, his hands balling into fists. Was the Cam reclining before him of this time period? Or was he an anachronism, come back in time just as Daniel had? Cam flung the yak bone off the cliff and stood up, wiping his greasy hands on his jeans. Anachronism, Daniel decided.
You just missed her. Again. What took you so long?
Cam held out a small tin platter brimming with food.
Dumpling? They're divine.
Daniel knocked the plate to the ground.
Why didn't you stop her?
He had been to Tahiti, to Prussia, and now here to Tibet, in less time than it would take a mortal to cross a street. Always he felt as if he were hot on Luce's trail, and always she was just beyond reach. How did she continue to outpace him?
You said you didn't need my help. But you saw her,
Daniel demanded. Cam nodded.
Did she see you?
Cam shook his head.
Good.
Daniel scanned the bare mountaintop, trying to imagine Luce there. He cast a quick eye around, looking for traces of her. But there was nothing. Gray dirt, black rock, the cut of the wind, no life up here at all. It all seemed to him the loneliest place on earth.
What happened? He said, grilling Cam. What did she do?
Cam walked a casual circle around Daniel.
She, unlike the object of her affection, has an impeccable sense of timing. She arrived at just the right moment to see her own magnificent death, It is a good one, this time. Looks quite grand against this stark landscape. Even you must be able to admit that. No?
Daniel jerked his gaze away.
Anyway, where was I? Her own magnificent death. Already said that. Ah, yes. She stayed just long enough to watch you throw yourself over the edge of the cliff and forget to use your wings.
Daniel hung his head.
That didn't go over very well.
Daniel's hand snapped out and caught Cam by the throat.
You expect me to believe you just watched? You didn't talk to her? Didn't find out where she was going next? Didn't try to stop her?
Cam grunted and twisted out of Daniel's grip.
I was nowhere near her. By the time I reached this spot, she was gone. Again, you said you didn't need my help. I don't. Stay out of this. I'll handle it myself.
Cam chuckled and dropped back onto the tapestry rug, crossing his legs in front of him.
Thing is, Daniel, he said, drawing a handful of dried goji berries to his lips. Even if I trusted that you could handle it yourself, which, based on your existing record, I don't.
He wagged a finger.
You're not alone in this. Everyone's looking for her.
What do you mean, everyone?
When you took off after Luce the night we fought the outcasts, do you think the rest of us just sat around and played canasta? Gabby, Roland, Molly, Arian, even those two idiot Nephilim kids, they're all somewhere out there trying to find her.
You let them do that?
I'm not anyone's keeper, brother.
Don't call me that, Daniel snapped. I can't believe this. How could they? This is my responsibility.
Free will, Cam shrugged. It's all the rage these days.
Daniel's wings burned against his back, useless. What could he do about half a dozen anachronisms blundering about in the past? His fellow fallen angels would know how fragile the past was, would be careful. But Shelby and Miles? They were kids. They'd be reckless. They wouldn't know any better. They could destroy it all for Luce. They could destroy Luce herself. No, Daniel wouldn't give any of them the chance to get to her before he did. And yet, Cam had done it.
How can I trust that you didn't interfere? Daniel asked, trying not to show his desperation.
Cam rolled his eyes.
Because you know I know how dangerous interference is. Our end goals may be different, but we both need her to make it out of this alive.
Listen to me, Cam. Everything is at stake here.
Don't demean me. I know what's at stake. You're not the only one who's already struggled for too long.
I'm afraid, Daniel admitted. If she too deeply alters the past...
It could change who she is when she returns to the present, Cam said. Yeah, I'm scared too.
Daniel closed his eyes.
It would mean that any chance she had of breaking free of this curse...
would be squandered.
Daniel eyed Cam. The two of them hadn't spoken to each other like this, like brothers in ages.
She was alone. You're sure none of the others had gotten to her, either?
For a moment, Cam gazed past Daniel at a space on the mountaintop beyond them. It looked as empty as Daniel felt. Cam's hesitation made the back of Daniel's neck itch.
None of the others had reached her, Cam said finally.
Are you certain?
I'm the one who saw her here. You're the one who never shows up on time. And besides, her being out here at all is no one's fault but yours.
That's not true. I didn't show her how to use the announcers.
Cam laughed bitterly.
I don't mean the announcers, you moron. I mean that she thinks this is just about the two of you, a stupid lover's quarrel.
It is about the two of us.
Daniel's voice was strained. He would have liked to pick up the boulder behind Cam's head and drop it over his skull.
Liar!
Cam leaped to his feet, hot fury flashing in his green eyes.
It's far bigger, and you know it is.
He rolled back his shoulders and unleashed his giant marbled wings. They filled the air with golden glory, blocking the sun for a moment. When they curved toward Daniel, he stepped back, repulsed.
You'd better find her before she, or someone else, steps in and rewrites our entire history. And makes you, me, all of this,
Cam snapped his fingers,
obsolete.
Daniel snarled, unfurling his own silvery white wings, feeling them extend out and out and out at his sides, shuddering as they pulsed near Cam's. He felt warmer now and capable of anything.
"I'll handle it," he started to say.
But Cam had already taken off, the kickback from his flight sending small tornadoes of dirt spiraling up from the ground. Daniel shielded his eyes from the sun and looked up as the golden wings beat across the sky, then, in an instant, were gone.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Passion by Lauren Kate. Read for you by Justine Eyre. 11. Coup de foudre. Versailles, France, February 14, 1723. Splash! Luce came out of the announcer underwater. She opened her eyes, but the warm, cloudy water stung so sharply that she promptly clamped them shut again. Her soggy clothes dragged her down, so she wrestled off the mink coat. As it sank beneath her, she kicked hard for the surface, desperate for air. It was only a few inches above her head. She gasped, then her feet found bottom, and she stood. She wiped the water from her eyes. She was in a bathtub. Granted, it was the largest bathtub she'd ever seen, as big as a small swimming pool. It was kidney-shaped and made of the smoothest white porcelain, and sat alone in the middle of a giant room that looked like a gallery in a museum. The high ceilings were covered by enormous frescoed portraits of a dark-haired family who looked royal. A chain of golden roses framed each bust, and fleshy cherubs hovered between, playing trumpets toward the sky. Against each of the walls, which were papered in elaborate swirls of turquoise, pink, and gold, was an oversized, lavishly carved wooden armoire. Luce sank back into the tub. Where was she now? She used her hand to skim the surface, parting about 5 inches of frothy bubbles, the consistency of Chantilly cream. A pillow-sized sponge bobbed up, and she realized she had not bathed since Helston. She was filthy. She used the sponge to scrub at her face, then set to work peeling off the rest of her clothes. She sloshed all the sopping garments over the side of the tub. That was when Bill floated slowly up out of the bathtub to hover a foot above the surface. The portion of the tub from which he had risen was dark and cloudy with gargoyle grit. "Bill," she cried, "can't you tell I need a few minutes of privacy?" He held a hand up to shield his eyes. "You done thrashing around in here yet, Jaws?" With his other hand, he wiped some bubbles from his bald head. "You could have warned me that I was about to take a plunge underwater," Lou said. "I did warn you." He hopped up to the rim of the tub and tottered across it until he was in Luce's face. "Right as we were coming out of the announcer. You just didn't hear me because you were underwater."
"Very helpful, thank you."
"You needed a bath anyway," he said. "This is a big night for you, Toots."
"Why? What's happening?"
"What's happening?" she asks. Bill grabbed her shoulder. "Only the grandest ball since the Sun King popped off. And I say, so what if this boom is hosted by his greasy pubescent son? It's still going to be right downstairs in the largest, most spectacular ballroom in Versailles, and everybody's going to be there."
Luce shrugged. The ball sounded fine, but it had nothing to do with her.
"I'll clarify," Bill said. "Everyone will be there, including Lee Virgili. The Princess of Savoy? Ring a bell?"
He bopped Luce on the nose.
"That's you."
"Humph," Luce said, sliding her head back to rest against the soapy wall of the tub. "Sounds like a big night for her. But what am I supposed to do while they're all at the ball?"
"See, remember when I told you?"
The knob on the door of the great bathroom was turning. Bill eyed it, groaning.
"To be continued."
As the door swung open, he held his pointy nose and disappeared under the water. Luce writhed and kicked him to the other side of the tub.
He resurfaced, glared at her, and started floating on his back through the suds. Bill might have been invisible to the pretty girl with corn-colored curls who was standing in the doorway in a long cranberry-colored gown, but Luce wasn't. At the sight of someone in the tub, the girl reared back.
"Oh, Princess Lee, forgive me," she said in French. "I was told this chamber was empty. I'd run a bath for Princess Elizabeth."
She pointed to the tub where Luce was soaking.
"And was just about to send her up along with her ladies."
"Well..." Luce racked her brain, desperate to come off as more regal than she felt. "You may not send her up, nor her ladies. This is my chamber, where I intended to bathe in peace."
"I beg your pardon,"
the girl said, bowing.
"A thousand times."
"It's all right," Luce said quickly, when she saw the girl's honest despair. "There must just have been a misunderstanding." The girl curtsied and began to close the door. Bill peeked his horned head up above the surface of the water and whispered,
"Clothes!"
Luce used her bare foot to push him down.
"Wait!"
Luce called after the girl, who slowly pushed the door open again. "I need your help, dressing for the ball."
"What about your ladies-in-waiting, Princess Lee? There's Agatha or Eloise?"
"No, no. The girls and I had a spat," Luce hurried on, trying not to talk too much for fear of giving herself away completely. "They picked out the most, horrid gown for me to wear, so I sent them away. This is an important ball, you know."
"Yes, Princess."
"Could you find something for me?" Luce asked the girl, gesturing with her head at the armoire.
"Me? Help you dress?"
"You're the only one here, aren't you?" Luce said, hoping that something in that armoire would fit her and look halfway decent for a ball. "What's your name?"
"Anne-Marie, Princess."
"Great," Luce said, trying to channel Lucinda from Helston by simply acting self-important, and she threw in a bit of Shelby's know-it-all attitude for good measure. "Hop to it, Anne-Marie. I won't be late because of your sluggishness. Be a dear and fetch me a gown." 10 minutes later, Luce stood before an expansive three-way mirror, admiring the stitching on the bust of the first gown Anne-Marie had tugged from the armoire. The gown was made of tiered black taffeta, tightly gathered at the waist, then swirling into a gloriously wide bell shape near the ground. Luce's hair had been swept up into a twist, then tucked under a dark, heavy wig of elaborate curls. Her face shimmered with a dusting of powder and rouge. She was wearing so many undergarments that it felt as though someone had draped a 50-pound weight over her body. How did girls move in these things, let alone dance? As Anne-Marie drew the corset tighter around her torso, Luce gaped at her reflection. The wig made her look 5 years older, and she was sure she'd never had this much cleavage before, in any of her lives. For the briefest moment, she allowed herself to forget her nerves about meeting her past princess self, and whether she'd find Daniel again before she made a huge mess out of their love, and simply felt what every other girl going to that ball that night must have felt. Breathing was overrated in a dress as amazing as this.
"You're ready, Princess," Anne-Marie whispered reverently. "I will leave you, if you'll allow me."
As soon as Anne-Marie shut the door behind her, Bill propelled himself out of the water, sending a cold spray of soap suds across the room. He sailed over the armoire and came to rest on a small turquoise silk footstool. He pointed at Luce's gown, at her wig, then at her gown again.
"Oh, la la! Hot stuff!"
"You haven't even seen my shoes." She lifted the hem of her skirt to show off a pair of pointy-toed emerald-green heels inlaid with jade flowers. They matched the emerald-green lace that trimmed the bust of her dress and were easily the most amazing shoes she had ever seen, let alone slipped onto her feet.
"Ew!"
Bill squealed.
"Very rococo."
"So I'm really doing this? I'm just going to go down there and pretend..."
"No pretending," Bill shook his head. "Own it. Own that cleavage, girl. You know you want to."
"Okay, I am pretending you didn't say that." Luce laughed, winced. "So I go downstairs and own it, or whatever. But what do I do when I find my past self? I don't know anything about her. Do I just..."
"Take her hand," Bill said cryptically.
She'll be very touched by the gesture, I'm sure.
Bill was hinting at something, clearly, but Luce didn't understand. Then she remembered his words right before they dove through the last announcer.
Tell me about going 3D.
Aha! Bill mimed, leaning against an invisible wall in the air, his wings blurred as he fluttered in front of her.
You know how some things are just too out of this world to be pinned down by dull old words? Like, for example, the way you swoon when Daniel comes in for a long kiss, or the feeling of heat that spreads through your body when his wings unfurl on a dark night.
Don't. Luce's hand went to her heart involuntarily. There were no words that could ever do justice to what Daniel made her feel. Bill was making fun of her, but that didn't mean she ached any less at being away from Daniel for so long.
Same deal with 3D. You'll just have to live it to understand it.
As soon as Bill opened the door for Luce, the sounds of distant orchestra music and the polite murmuring of a large crowd flooded into the room. She felt something pulling her down there. Maybe it was Daniel. Maybe it was Lee. Bill bowed in the air.
After you, princess.
She followed the noise down two broad, winding flights of golden stairs, the music getting louder with each step. As she swept through empty gallery after empty gallery, she began to smell the mouth-watering aromas of roasted quail and stewed apples and potatoes au gratin. And perfume. So much she could hardly inhale without coughing.
Now, aren't you glad I made you take a bath? Bill asked. One less bottle of Eau de Riquette punching holes in L'Ozone.
Luce didn't answer. She'd entered a long hall of mirrors, and in front of her, a pair of women and a man were crossing toward the entrance of a main room. The women didn't walk. They glided. Their yellow and blue gowns practically swished across the floor. The man walked between them, his ruffled white shirt dapper under his long silver jacket, and his heels nearly as high as the ones on Luce's shoes. All three of them wore wigs, a full foot taller than the one on Luce's own head, which felt enormous and weighed a ton. Watching them, Luce felt clumsy, the way her skirt swung from side to side as she walked. They turned to look at her, and all three pairs of eyes narrowed, as if they could tell instantly that she had not been bred to attend high society balls.
"Ignore them," Bill said. "There are snobs in every lifetime. In the end, they've got nothing on you."
Luce nodded, falling behind the trio, who passed through a set of mirrored doorways into the ballroom. The ultimate ballroom. The ballroom to end all ballrooms. Luce couldn't help herself. She stopped in her tracks and whispered, "Wow." It was majestic. A dozen chandeliers hung low from the faraway ceiling, glittering with bright white candles. Where the walls weren't made of mirrors, they were covered with gold. The parquet dance floor seemed to stretch on into the next city, and ringing the dance floor were long tables covered in white linen, laid with fine china place settings, platters of cakes and cookies, and great crystal goblets filled with ruby-colored wine. Thousands of white daffodils peeked out of hundreds of dark red vases set upon the dozens of dining tables. On the far side of the room, a line of exquisitely dressed young women was forming. There were about 10 of them, standing together, whispering and laughing outside a great golden door. Another crowd had gathered around an enormous crystal punch bowl near the orchestra. Luce helped herself to a glass.
"Excuse me," she asked a pair of women next to her.
Their artful gray curls formed twin towers on their heads.
"What are those girls in line for?"
"Why, to please the king, of course," one woman chuckled. "Those demoiselles are here to see if they might please him into marriage."
Marriage? But they looked so young. All of a sudden, Luce's skin began to feel hot and itchy. Then it hit her. Lee is in that line. Luce gulped and studied each of the young women. There she was, third in line, magnificently wrapped in a long black gown, only slightly different from the one that Luce herself was wearing. Her shoulders were covered with a black velvet capelet, and her eyes never rose from the floor. She wasn't laughing with the other girls. She looked as frustrated as Luce felt.
"Bill,"
Luce whispered. But the gargoyle flew right in front of her face and shushed her with a finger to his fat stone lips.
Only crazies talk to their invisible gargoyles, he hissed. And crazies don't get invited to many balls. Now hush.
But what about...
Hush! What about going 3D? Luce took a deep breath. The last instruction he'd given her was to take Lee by the hand. She strode over, crossing the dance floor and bypassing the servants with their trays of foie gras and chambon. She nearly plowed right into the girl behind Lee, who was trying to cut ahead of Lee in line by pretending to whisper something to a friend.
"Excuse me," Luce said to Lee, whose eyes widened and whose lips parted and let a tiny, confused sound escape her mouth. But Luce couldn't wait for Lee to react. She reached down and grabbed her by the hand. It fit into her own like a puzzle piece. She squeezed. Luce's stomach dropped, as if she'd gone down the first hill of a roller coaster. Her skin began to vibrate, and a drowsy, gently rocking sensation came over her. She felt her eyelids flutter, but some instinct told her to keep holding fast to Lee's hand. She blinked, and Lee blinked, and then they both blinked at the same time. And on the other side of the blink, Luce could see herself in Lee's eyes, and then could see Lee from her own eyes, and then... She could see no one in front of her at all. "Oh," she cried out, and her voice sounded just as it always had. She looked down at her hands, which looked just as they always had. She reached up and felt her face, her hair, her wig, all of which felt the same as they had before. But something had shifted. She lifted the hem of her dress and peeked down at her shoes. They were magenta, with diamond-shaped high heels and tied at the ankle with an elegant silver bow. What had she done? Then she realized what Bill had meant by going 3D. She had literally stepped into Lee's body. Luce glanced around her, terrified. To her horror, all the other girls in line were motionless. In fact, everyone Luce looked at was frozen stiff. It was as if the entire party had been put on pause.
See? Bill's voice came hotly in her ear.
No words for this, right?
What's happening, Bill?
Her voice was rising.
Right now, not a whole lot. I had to put the brakes on the party, lest you freak out. Once we're straight on the 3D business, I'll start it back up again.
So no one can see this right now? Luce asked, waving her hand slowly in front of the face of the pretty brunette girl who'd been standing in front of Lee.
The girl didn't flinch. She didn't blink. Her face was frozen in an unending, open-mouthed grin.
Nope.
Bill demonstrated by wiggling his tongue near the ear of an older man, who stood frozen with an escargot poised between his fingers, inches from his mouth.
Not until I snap me fingers.
Luce exhaled, once more strangely relieved at having Bill's help. She needed a few minutes to get used to the idea that she was... Was she really...
I'm inside my past self, she said.
Yes.
Then where did I go? Where's my body?
You're in there somewhere. He tapped at her collarbone. You'll pop out again when the time is right. But for now, you've slipped entirely inside your past, like a cute little turtle in a burrowed shell. Except it's more than that. When you're in Lee's body, your very beings are entwined, so all sorts of good stuff comes with the package. Her memories, her passions, her manners. Lucky for you. Of course, you also have to grapple with her shortcomings. This one, if I recall, puts her foot in her mouth with some regularity. So watch out.
Amazing, Luce whispered. So if I could just find Daniel, I'd be able to feel exactly what she feels toward him.
Sure, I guess. But you do realize that once I snap my fingers, Lee has obligations at this ball that don't include Daniel. This isn't really his scene, and by that I mean no way the guards would let a poor stable boy in here.
Luce didn't care about any of that. Poor stable boy or not, she would find him. She couldn't wait. Inside Lee's body, she could even hold him, maybe even kiss him. The anticipation of it was almost overwhelming.
Hello? Bill flicked a hard finger against her temple. You ready yet? Get in there, see what you can see, then get out while the getting's good, if you know what I mean.
Luce nodded. She straightened Lee's black gown and held her head a little higher.
Snap to it.
And go.
Bill snapped his fingers. For a split second, the party snagged like a scratched record. Then every mid-conversation syllable, every whiff of perfume being carried through the air, every drop of punch sliding down every bejeweled throat, every note of music from every player in the orchestra, picked up, smoothed out, and carried on, as if nothing in the world had happened. Only Luce had changed. Her mind became assaulted by a thousand words and images. A sprawling, thatch-roofed country house in the foothills of the Alps. A chestnut-colored horse named Gauche. The smell of straw everywhere. A single, long-stemmed white peony laid across her pillow. And Daniel, coming back from the well with four heavy buckets of water balanced from a pole laid across his shoulders, grooming Gauche first thing every morning so Lee could take him for a ride. When it came to small, lovely favors for Luce, there was nothing Daniel overlooked, even in the midst of all the labor he did for her father. His violet eyes finding her always, Daniel in her dreams, in her heart, in her arms. It was like the flashes of Lushka's memories that had come to her in Moscow when she touched the church gate, but stronger, more overwhelming, intrinsically a part of her. Daniel was here. In the stables or the servants' quarters, he was here, and she would find him. Something rustled near Luce's neck. She jumped.
Just me. Bill flitted over the top of her capelet. You're doing great.
The great golden doors at the head of the room were eased open by two footmen, who stood at attention on either side. The girls in line in front of Luce began to titter with excitement, and then a hush swept the room. Meanwhile, Luce was looking for the fastest way out of here and into Daniel's arms.
Focus, Luce, Bill said, as if reading her mind. You're about to be called into duty.
The strings of the orchestra began playing the Baroque opening chords of the Ballet de Jeunesse, and the whole room shifted its attention. Luce followed everyone else's gaze and gasped. She recognized the man who stood there in the doorway, gazing out at the party with a patch over one eye. It was the Duc de Bourbon, the cousin of the king. He was tall and skinny, as wilted as a bean plant in a drought. His ill-fitting blue velvet suit was ornamented with a mauve sash to match the mauve stockings on his twig-thin legs. His ostentatious powdered wig and his milky white face were both exceptionally ugly. She didn't recognize the Duke from some photograph in a history book. She knew far too much about him. She knew everything. Like how the royal ladies-in-waiting swapped body jokes about the sad size of the Duke's scepter, about how he'd lost that eye, hunting accident, on a trip he'd joined to appease the king, and about how, right now, the Duke was going to send in the girls whom he'd preselected as suitable marriage material for the 12-year-old king waiting inside. And Luce, no, Lee, was an early favorite of the Duke's to fill the slot. That was the reason for the heavy, aching feeling in her chest. Lee couldn't marry the king, because she loved Daniel. She had loved him passionately for years. But in this life, Daniel was a servant, and the two of them were forced to hide their romance. Luce felt Lee's paralyzing fear that if she took the king's fancy tonight, all hope of having a life with Daniel would disappear. Bill had warned her that going 3D would be intense, but there was no way Luce could have prepared for the onslaught of so much emotion. Every fear and doubt that had ever crossed Lee's mind swamped Luce. Every hope and dream. It was too much. She gasped and looked around her at the ball, anywhere but at the Duke, and realized she knew everything there was to know about this time and place. She suddenly understood why the king was looking for a wife, even though he was already engaged. She recognized half the faces moving around her in the ballroom, knew their stories, and knew which ones envied her. She knew how to stand in the corseted gown so that she could breathe comfortably. And she knew, judging from the skilled eye she cast on the dancers, that Lee had been trained in the art of ballroom dancing from childhood. It was an eerie feeling being in Lee's body, as if Luce were both a ghost and the one haunted.
The orchestra came to the end of the song, and a man near the door stepped forward to read from a scroll.
"Princess Lee of Savoy."
Luce raised her head with more elegance and confidence than she'd expected, and accepted the hand of the young man in the pale green waistcoat who had appeared to escort her into the king's receiving room. Once inside the entirely pastel blue room, Luce tried not to stare at the king. His towering gray wig looked silly, poised over his small, drawn face. His pale blue eyes leered at the line of duchesses and princesses, all beautiful, all dressed exquisitely, the way a man deprived of food might leer at a pig on a spit. The pimply figure on the throne was little more than a child. Louis XV had assumed the crown when he was only 5 years old. In compliance with his dying father's wishes, he'd been betrothed to the Spanish princess, the Infanta. But she was still barely a toddler. It was a match made in hell. The young king, who was frail and sickly, wasn't expected to live long enough to produce an heir with the Spanish princess, who herself might also die before reaching childbearing age. So the king had to find a consort to produce an heir, which explained this extravagant party and the ladies lined up on display. Luce fidgeted with the lace on her gown, feeling ridiculous. The other girls all looked so patient. Maybe they truly wanted to marry the acne-ridden 12-year-old King Louis, though Luce didn't see how that was possible. They were all so elegant and beautiful. From the Russian princess, Elizabeth, whose sapphire velvet gown had a collar trimmed in rabbit's fur, to Maria, the princess from Poland, whose tiny button nose and full red mouth made her dizzyingly alluring, they all gazed at the boy king with wide, hopeful eyes. But he was staring straight at Luce, with a satisfied smirk that made her stomach turn.
"That one," he pointed at her lazily. "Let me see her up close."
The Duke appeared at Luce's side, gently shoving her shoulders forward with his long, icy fingers.
"Present yourself, Princess," he said quietly. "This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity."
The Luce part of her groaned inwardly, but on the outside, Lee was in charge, and she practically floated forward to greet the king. She curtsied with a perfectly proper bow of her head, extending her hand for his kiss. It was what her family expected of her.
"Will you get fat?" the king blurted out at Luce, eyeing her corset-squeezed waist. "I like the way she looks now," he said to the Duke, "but I don't want her to get fat."
Had she been in her own body, Luce might have told the king exactly what she thought of his unappealing physique. But Lee had perfect composure, and Luce felt herself reply,
"I should hope to always please the king, with my looks and with my temperament."
"Yes, of course," the Duke purred, walking a tight circle around Luce. "I'm sure His Majesty could keep the princess on the diet of his choice."
"What about hunting?" the king asked.
"Your Majesty," the Duke began to say, "that isn't befitting a queen. You have plenty of other hunting companions. I, for one..."
"My father is an excellent hunter," Luce said.
Her brain was whirling, working toward something, anything, that might help her escape this scene.
"Should I bed down with your father, then?" the king sneered.
"Knowing Your Majesty likes guns," Luce said, straining to keep her tone polite, "I have brought you a gift, my father's most prized hunting rifle. He'd asked me to bring it to you this evening, but I wasn't sure when I'd have the pleasure of making your acquaintance." She had the king's full attention. He was perched on the edge of his throne.
"What's it look like? Are there jewels in its butt?"
The stock is hand-carved from cherry wood," she said, feeding the king the details Bill called out from where he stood beside the king's chair. "The boar was milled by...
oh, what would sound impressive? By a Russian metalworker who has since gone to work for the Tsar."
Bill leaned over the king's pastries and sniffed hungrily.
"These look good."
Luce repeated Bill's line and then added,
"I could bring it to Your Majesty if you'd just allow me to go and retrieve it from my chambers."
"A servant can bring the gun down tomorrow, I'm sure," the Duke said.
"I want to see it now."
The king crossed his arms, looking even younger than he was.
"Please,"
Luce turned to the Duke.
It would give me great pleasure to present the rifle to His Majesty myself.
Go.
The king snapped his fingers, dismissing Luce. Luce wanted to spin on her heel, but Lee knew better. One never showed the king one's back, and she bowed and walked backward out of the room. She showed the most gracious restraint, gliding along as though she hadn't any feet at all, just until she got to the other side of the mirrored door. Then she ran. Through the ballroom, past the splendid dancing couples in the orchestra, whirring from one pastel yellow room into another, decorated all in deep chartreuse. She ran past gasping ladies and grunting gentlemen, over hardwood floors and thick, opulent Persian rugs, until the lights grew dimmer and the partygoers thinned out, and at last she found the mullioned doors that led outside. She thrust them open, gasping in her corset, to draw the fresh air of freedom into her lungs. She strode onto an enormous balcony made of brilliant white marble that wrapped around the entire second story of the palace. The night was bright with stars. All Luce wanted to do was to be in Daniel's arms and flying up toward those stars. If only he were by her side, to take her far from all of this.
What are you doing out here?
She spun around. He'd come for her. He stood across the balcony in simple servant's clothes, looking confused and alarmed, and tragically, hopelessly, in love.
Daniel!
She dashed toward him. He moved toward her, too, his violet eyes lighting up. He threw open his arms, beaming. When they finally connected, and Luce was wrapped up in his arms, she thought she might explode from happiness. But she didn't. She just stayed there, her head buried against his wonderful, broad chest. She was home. His arms were wrapped around her back, resting on her waist, and he pulled her as close to him as possible. She felt him breathe and smelled the husky scent of straw on his neck. Luce kissed just below his left ear, then underneath his jaw. Soft, gentle kisses until she reached his lips, which parted against her own. Then the kisses became longer, filled with a love that seemed to pour out from the very depths of her soul. After a moment, Luce broke away and stared into Daniel's eyes.
"I've missed you so much,"
Daniel chuckled.
"I've missed you, too, these past 3 hours. Are you all right?"
Luce ran her fingers through Daniel's silky blonde hair.
"I just needed to get some air, to find you."
She squeezed him tightly. Daniel narrowed his eyes.
"I don't think we should be out here, Lee. They must be expecting you back in the receiving room." "I don't care. I won't go back in there. And I would never marry that pig. I will never marry anyone but you."
"Shh." Daniel winced, stroking her cheek.
"Someone might hear you. They've cut off heads for less than that."
"Someone already did hear you," a voice called from the open doorway.
The Duc de Bourbon stood with his arms crossed over his chest, smirking at the sight of Lee in the arms of a common servant.
"I believe the king should hear of this."
And then he was gone, disappearing inside the palace. Luce's heart raced, driven by Lee's fear and her own. Had she altered history? Was Lee's life supposed to proceed differently? But Luce couldn't know, could she? That was what Roland had told her. Whatever changes she made in time, they would immediately be part of what had happened. Yet Luce was still here, so if she'd changed history by ditching the king, well, it didn't seem to matter to Lucinda Price in the 21st century. When she spoke to Daniel, her voice was steady.
"I don't care if that vile duke kills me. I'd sooner die than give you up."
A wave of heat swept over her, causing her to sway where she stood.
"Oh,"
she said, clasping a hand to her head. She recognized it distantly, like something she'd seen 1,000 times before, but had never paid attention to.
"Lee," he whispered. "Do you know what's coming?" "Yes," she whispered.
"And you know that I'll be with you until the end."
Daniel's eyes bored into her, full of tenderness and worry. He wasn't lying to her. He'd never lied to her. He never would. She knew that now, could see it. He revealed just enough to keep her alive a few moments longer, to suggest everything Luce was already beginning to learn on her own.
"Yes."
She closed her eyes.
"But there's so much I still don't understand.
I don't know how to stop this from happening. I don't know how to break this curse.
Daniel smiled, but there were tears brimming in his eyes. Luce wasn't afraid. She felt free, freer than she'd ever felt before. A strange, deep understanding was unfurling in her memory, something becoming visible in the fog of her head. One kiss from Daniel would open a door, releasing her from a loveless marriage to a bratty child, from the cage of this body. This body wasn't who she really was. It was just a shell, part of a punishment. And so this body's death wasn't a tragedy at all. It was simply the end of a chapter, a beautiful, necessary release. Footsteps sounded on the stairs behind them, the Duke returning with his men. Daniel gripped her shoulders.
Lee, listen to me.
Kiss me, she begged. Daniel's face changed, as if he needed to hear nothing else. He lifted her off the ground and crushed her against his chest. Tingling heat coursed through her body as she kissed him harder and deeper, letting herself go completely. She arched her back and tilted her head toward the sky and kissed him until she was dizzy with bliss. Until dark traces of shadow swirled and blackened the stars overhead. An obsidian symphony. But behind it, there was light. For the first time, Luce could feel the light shining through. It was absolutely glorious. It was time for her to go. Get out while the getting's good, Bill had warned her, while she was still alive. But she couldn't leave yet, not while everything was so warm and lovely, not with Daniel still kissing her, wild with passion. She opened her eyes, and the colors of his hair and his face and the night itself burned brighter and more beautiful, lit up by an intense radiance. That radiance was coming from deep inside Luce herself. With every kiss, her whole body edged closer to the light. This was the only true way back to Daniel, out of one mundane life and into another. Luce would happily die 1,000 times, just as long as she could be with him again on the other side.
"Stay with me,"
Daniel pleaded, even as she felt herself incandesce. She moaned. Tears streamed down her face. The softest smile parted her lips.
"What is it?"
Daniel asked. He would not stop kissing her.
Lee.
It's so much love, she said, opening her eyes just as the fire bloomed through her chest. A great column of light exploded in the night, rocketing heat and flames high in the sky, knocking Daniel off his feet, knocking Luce clear out of Lee's death and into darkness, where she was ice cold and could see nothing. A shuddering wave of vertigo overtook her. Then, the smallest flash of light. Bill's face came into view, hovering over Luce with a worried look. She was lying prone on a flat surface. She touched the smooth stone beneath her, heard the water trickling nearby, sniffed at the cool, musty air. She'd come out inside an announcer.
"You scared me," Bill said. "I didn't know. I mean, when she died, I didn't know how. Didn't know whether maybe you might get stuck somewhere. But I wasn't sure."
He shook his head as if to banish the thought. She tried to stand, but her legs were wobbly, and everything about her felt incredibly cold. She sat cross-legged against the stone wall. She was back in the black gown with the emerald green trim. The emerald green slippers stood side by side in the corner. Bill must have slipped them off her feet and laid her down after she'd... after Lee... Luce still could not believe it.
"I could see things, Bill. Things I never knew before."
"Like?"
"Like she was happy when she died. I was happy. Ecstatic. The whole thing was just so beautiful."
Her mind raced. Knowing he'd be there for me on the other side, knowing that all I was doing was escaping something wrong and oppressive, that the beauty of our love endures death, endures everything. It was incredible.
"Incredibly dangerous," Bill said shortly. "Let's not do that again, okay?"
"Don't you get it? Ever since I left Daniel in the present, this is the best thing that's happened to me, and..."
But Bill had disappeared into the darkness again. She heard the trickle of the waterfall. A moment later, the sound of water boiling. When Bill reappeared, he'd made tea. He carried the pot on a thin metal tray and handed Luce a steaming mug.
"Where did you get that?" she asked.
I said, let's not do that again, okay?
But Luce was too wrapped up in her own thoughts to really hear him. This was the closest she'd come to any kind of clarity. She would go 3D. What did he call it? Cleaving? Again. She would see her lives through to their ends, one after another, until in one of those lives she found out exactly why it happened. And then she'd break this curse.
12. The Prisoner. Paris, France, December 1st, 1723. Daniel cursed. The announcer had dumped him out onto a bed of damp, dirty straw. He rolled and sat up, his back against a frozen stone wall. Something from the ceiling was dripping cold, oily drops onto his forehead, but there wasn't enough light to see what it was. Opposite him was an open slot of a window, crudely cut into the stone, and hardly wide enough to stick a fist through. It let in only a sliver of moonlight, but enough blustery night air to bring the temperature near freezing. He couldn't see the rats scampering in the cell, but he could feel their slimy bodies writhing through the moldy straw beneath his legs. He could feel their ragged teeth sawing into the leather of his shoes. He could hardly breathe for the stink of their waste. He kicked out, and there was a squeal. Then he gathered his feet beneath him and rose onto his haunches.
"You're late."
The voice next to Daniel made him jump. He had carelessly assumed he was alone. The voice was a parched and raspy whisper, but somehow still familiar. Then came a scraping sound, like metal being dragged across stone. Daniel stiffened as a blacker piece of shadow detached itself from the darkness and leaned forward. The figure moved into the pale gray light under the window, where at last the silhouette of a face grew dimly visible. His own face. He'd forgotten this cell, forgotten this punishment, so this was where he'd ended up. In some ways, Daniel's earlier self looked just as he did now, the same nose and mouth, the same distance between the same gray eyes. His hair was gruffier and stiff with grease, but it was the same pale gold it was now. And yet, prisoner Daniel looked so different. His face was horribly gaunt and pale, his forehead creased with filth. His body looked emaciated, and his skin was beaded with sweat. This was what her absence did to him. Yes, he wore the ball and chain of a prisoner, but the real jailer here was his own guilt. He remembered it all now, and he remembered the visitation of his future self and a frustrating, bitter interview. Paris, the Bastille, where he'd been locked up by the Duc de Bourbon's guards after Lee disappeared from the palace. There had been other jails, crueler living conditions and worse food in Daniel's existence, but the mercilessness of his own regret that year in the Bastille was one of the hardest trials he'd ever overcome. Some, but not all of it, had to do with the injustice of being charged with her murder. But if Daniel was already here, locked up in the Bastille, it meant that Lee was already dead. So Luce had already come and gone. His past self was right. He was too late. "Wait," he said to the prisoner in the darkness, drawing closer, but not so close that they risked touching. "How did you know what I've come back for?" The scrape of the ball being dragged across the stone meant his past self had leaned back against the wall.
"You're not the only one who's come through here looking for her."
Daniel's wings burned, sending heat licking down his shoulder blades.
"Cam."
"No, not Cam," his past self responded.
"Two kids." "Shelby?"
Now Daniel pounded his fist into the stone floor.
"And the other one, Miles. You're not serious. Those Nephilim, they were here?"
"About a month ago, I think."
He pointed at the wall behind him, where some crooked tally marks were etched into the wall.
"I tried to keep track of the day, but you know how it is. Time passes in funny ways. It gets away from you."
"I remember."
Daniel shuddered.
"But the Nephilim, you talked to them?"
He racked his memory, and faint images came to mind from his imprisonment, images of a girl and boy. He'd always taken them for the phantoms of grief, just two more of the delusions that beset him when she'd gone and he was alone again.
"For a moment."
The prisoner's voice sounded tired and far away.
"They weren't all that interested in me."
"Good."
Once they found out she was dead, they were in a great hurry to move on.
His gray eyes were eerily penetrating.
Something you and I can understand. Where did they go? Don't know.
The prisoner cracked a smile too big for his thin face.
I don't think they did, either. You should have seen how long it took them to open an announcer. Looked like a couple of bumbling fools.
Daniel felt himself almost begin to laugh.
It isn't funny, his past self said. They care for her.
But Daniel felt no tenderness for the Nephilim.
They're a threat to all of us. The destruction they could cause.
He closed his eyes.
They have no idea what they're doing. Why can't you catch her, Daniel?
His past self laughed dryly.
We've seen each other before over the millennia. I remember you chasing her, and never catching her. I don't know.
The words stuck in Daniel's throat, a long sob building behind them. Quivering, he stifled it.
I can't reach her. Somehow I am eternally arriving a heartbeat too late, as though someone or something is working behind the scenes to keep her from me.
Your announcers will always take you where you need to be.
I need to be with her.
Perhaps they know what you need better than you know yourself.
What?
Maybe she shouldn't be stopped.
The prisoner rattled his chain listlessly.
That she is able to travel at all means something fundamental was changed. Maybe you can't catch her until she works that change into the original curse.
But...
He didn't know what to say. The sob rose in Daniel's chest, drowning his heart in a torrent of shame and sadness.
She needs me. Every second is a lost eternity. And if she makes a misstep, everything could be lost. She could change the past and... cease to exist.
But that's the nature of risk, isn't it? You gamble everything on the slenderest of hopes.
His past self began to reach out, almost touching Daniel's arm. Both of them wanted to feel a connection. At the last instant, Daniel jerked away. His past self sighed.
What if it's you, Daniel? What if you're the one who has to alter the past? What if you can't catch her until you've rewritten the curse to include a loophole?
Impossible.
Daniel snorted.
Look at me. Look at you. We're wretched without her. We're nothing when we're not with Lucinda. There is no reason why my soul wouldn't want to find her as quickly as possible.
Daniel wanted to fly away from here, but something was nagging at him.
Why haven't you offered to accompany me? He asked finally. I would refuse you, of course, but some of the others... When I encountered myself in another life, he wanted to join in. Why don't you?
A rat crawled along the prisoner's leg, stopping to sniff at the bloody chains around his ankles.
I escaped once, he said slowly. You remember? Yes, Daniel said. When we escaped, early on, we went straight back to Savoy.
He looked up at the false hope offered by the light outside the window.
Why did we go there? We should have known we were walking right into a trap.
The prisoner leaned back and rattled his chains.
We had no other choice. It was the closest place to her.
He drew in a ragged breath.
It's so hard when she's in between. I never feel I can go on. I was glad when the Duke anticipated my escape, figured out where I'd go. He was waiting in Savoy, waiting at my patron's dinner table with his men, waiting to drag me back here.
Daniel remembered.
The punishment felt like something I'd earned.
Daniel!
The prisoner's forlorn face looked like it had been given a jolt of electricity. He looked alive again, or at least his eyes did. They glowed violet.
I think I've got it.
The words rushed carelessly out.
Take a lesson from the Duke.
Daniel licked his lips.
Excuse me?
All these lives you say that you've been trailing after her. Do as the Duke did with us. Anticipate her. Don't just catch up. Get there first. Wait her out.
But I don't know where her announcers will take her.
Of course you do, his past self insisted. You must have faint memories of where she'll end up. Maybe not every step along the way, but eventually it all has to end where it started.
A silent understanding passed between them. Running his hands along the wall near the window, Daniel summoned a shadow. It was invisible to him in the darkness, but he could feel it moving toward him, and he deftly worked it into shape. This announcer seemed as despondent as he felt.
"You're right," he said, jerking open the portal. "There is one place she's sure to go."
"Yes."
"And you should take your own advice and leave this place," Daniel said grimly. "You're rotting in here."
"At least this body's pain distracts me from the pain in my soul," his past self said.
"No, I wish you luck, but I won't leave these walls now. Not until she's settled in her next incarnation."
Daniel's wings bristled at his neck. He tried to sort out time and lives and memories in his head, but he kept circling around the same irksome thought.
She should be settled now, in conception. Can't you feel it?"
"Oh,"
his imprisoned past self said softly. He closed his eyes.
"I don't know that I can feel anything anymore."
The prisoner sighed heavily.
"Life's a nightmare."
"No, it's not. Not anymore. I'll find her. I'll redeem us both,"
Daniel shouted, desperate to get out of there, desperately taking another leap of faith through time.